From Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
This is the film that I have coming out post my dad passing. You know, what I take great comfort in is knowing that dad was very aware, like he was fully aware that, you know, I did this film.
For star Jamie Dornan, the emotional drama Belfast is also very personal. It's the first film to open after the passing of his father in March 2020. I'm Clayton Davis. On this episode of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we talked to Jamie Dornan about working with director Kenneth Branagh on his deeply personal film, Belfast, as well as how his infectious turn in Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar also gave him some insight into his dad. Finally, Dornan gives hints to the screenplay he's been writing and when we could see that screenplay hit the light of day. It's all on this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close.
We all have a story to tell, but what makes each one different is not how the story ends, but rather the place where it begins. Can
you
cross his
shoes? Do you think me and that girl have a future?
Well, why the heck not?
You know she's a Catholic. And
you
call me her?
Yes! You know who you are. Your buddy from Belfast, where everybody knows you. The whole family looks out for you.
Be good, son. If you can't be good,
be careful.
And that thought will keep you safe.
Daddy! We're looking to cleanse the community.
You wouldn't want to be the old man out in the street.
You touch my family and I'll kill you.
Written and directed by Kenneth Branagh, Belfast tells the semi-autobiographical story of Buddy, played by Jude Hill, a young boy who lives in Northern Ireland during the tumultuous late 1960s. Alongside his working-class family that includes his parents, played by Jamie Dornan and Katrina Balfe, and grandparents, played by Ciarán Hinds and Judi Dench, the family faces lessons and decisions that could break the family apart. I recently caught up with Jamie Dornan when he was a little bit under the weather to discuss Belfast, along with much more. We began by discussing why he was feeling a bit under the weather, which is definitely a loaded question these days.
It's a cold. It's an aggressive cold. The whole family have it. you know yourself, you get kids when it starts. Like, you see one of your children gets sick and you're like, okay, here we go. Like, in a couple of days, I usually fall pretty quick, but I took longer and to the point where I convinced myself that I wasn't going to get it, even though I could, they're this close from my face, like at all times. Yeah. I was like, I think I'm getting away with it. I'm not going to get this. And then it just hit me like, you know, a ton. So I'm pretty sick, but I'm good. I'm enjoying things. I'm enjoying life. It's, you know, I'm happy where I am, I think.
Yeah. You could call that a work and you're just like, yeah, I'm sick today. I can't go to work. Fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Luckily I'm not filming anything, so I'm able to, like, you know, there's no one I have to report to, I guess. I'm totally at home at the moment when I'm not doing press, so that's a good part of it.
So we're here today because I ran into someone that you did report to at one point, Mr. Kenneth Branagh, Sir Kenneth Branagh, excuse me, show my respect. I just ran into him at the Middleburg Film Festival, where the film won the audience award, another audience award, I should say, because it won Toronto, Middleburg, just won Mill Valley. People love it. It's a crowd pleaser. What has been your thoughts on the response to the movie?
I think I'm just overwhelmed. I think it's what it really is. You know, it's, you know, you go into every project you do with the best of intentions and you want to, you know, for the most part, you want to do exactly what you just said there. You want to please people, you know, with the work. Like, that's what you're often trying to do. Sometimes you're trying to unnerve people. Sometimes you're trying to scare people. Sometimes there's all entertain people purely. But I think with a film like Belfast, you know, I think there's an element of wanting the people to come out of it sort of uplifted and with a greater sense of what people from that part of the world went through and continue to go through. For before that that incident, you know, when the conflict started in 1969 and beyond, even to this point. And I think Ken managed to do that with the film. So it's nice for me. I'm very proud of it being from there, you know. So I feel like it's just this crazy ride that I'm on. Like, I never thought I'd do. You don't think you're going to do a film based on the town that you're from. That's just not how the world works, really. Particularly when it's directed by someone like Ken and it has that cast, you know, it's just one of those like lovely packages that I'm really like tangibly aware of how lucky I am to be a part of this film and for it to be have the response that it's had so far. I'm just trying to enjoy it, mate. I'm just trying to enjoy the whole thing, you know.
Yeah. How did you get involved? Like, did you audition? Did you like seek Ken out? Did you run into him on, you know, on the street during a pandemic? Like, how did you end up in this little film?
Well, it was funny because it was we were like one of the first, if not the first film out of the gate, certainly in the UK. I think Batman started again because they were shut down. In fact, I know that Batman started pretty much the exact same time as us. But in terms of a production that wasn't already shooting, I think we were first out of the gate. And there's nothing even been talked about. Like, it was very, you know, like so many people in so many industries, we're all sitting around going, what's happening next? Like, what is the world like now? Do we work again? Will films and television and theatre exist? Like, they certainly didn't look like they would for a while, particularly theatre. So it was a little bit of like, what's happening? When will the work come? In what form will it come? A lot of people are like, I was meant to do something else. So it's like, am I going back to that job? Never happened. And then I got a script in my inbox called Belfast, and I was instantly like, right, okay, who's making a film about my hometown and why, and what is the scope and scale of it, and who's involved? And then when I saw the people involved, I was like, all right, okay, this could be really interesting. And for some, I'm shifting. It's like it's like some time warp. For some reason, Ken really wanted to talk to me about it. It was kind of one of those things where, like, I mean, the whole thing was quick. Ken started writing it in March. You know, he'd always had this idea and said, you know, it's based on his life, obviously. But he only started actually properly writing it in March, and we started shooting it in end of August, I think. Crazy turnaround. And it was very much like, read it quick. Ken wants to speak to you. I think I read it that day. I spoke to Ken the next day. Yeah, no, I didn't. Luckily, didn't have to audition because I probably wouldn't be sat talking to you now. I'm not good at those. And, you know, we just had a great chat and hit it off. And that was it. I next saw him rehearsing like a few, you know, 6 weeks later.
What kind of things was he telling you about his father? Because for everyone who doesn't know, it's a personal story. Jude Hill, 11-year-old Jude Hill, who, by the way, like, what's that kid about? Like,
just
like, talented kids. That's what we're doing now.
He's just so talented and just so sweet and lovely with it. And him and I have this great thing where, like, it's sort of our currency where we come from to sort of take the mickey out of each other. And sometimes you push it too far and you can be really hard with each other. And actually his dad, we were doing press like last week, we did our London Film Festival premiere and stuff. He was giving me so much abuse, dude. He's 11 years old. And actually his dad, Daryl, was like, he said, like, I took Jude aside and told him, just like, lay off Jamie a bit. Like, it's so
Jamie's being like, bullied.
I was like, Daryl, I can take it. It's okay. Like, I was exactly the same when I was that age, and I'm still the same. It's fine. But he's a young kid, and he's got something to say. And before, ahead of all of that, he's just crazy talented. I could just do it and could take direct. Like, it's one thing to have something as a child actor like that, but to be able to take direction and harness it in the best way possible is something else altogether, you know, really truly is. He was just electric. He was truly electric. He was amazing. I love him so much. He's brilliant.
Yeah.
And they come from a brilliant family, which is all hugely important at that age when you're navigating those waters early, you know. But yeah, it was, Ken was just this, he was so accessible when I wanted information on his dad or Katrina wanted information on his mother, or any of us, you know. And he was also really, like, he wasn't like clinging on to some like very like staunch idea of who those people were and how they had to be represented. And my dad would never have said it that way. It was just none of that. And I played real people before. And as much as, you know, this is Ken's life, like he's never shied away from that, but there is a little bit of grace here and there with what we're putting the screen to what reality was. And I played people where it was more particular. And I felt a little bit more pressure with that of like, it's got to be like this. And no, beat for beat, this is how that, and you need to read this about them. And if you try to apply any of your own sort of nuance to it, that's not kind of what we're looking for. You know, I've been there and it's uncomfortable and it makes for an uncomfortable working environment. This was like the opposite of that. Ken was so open to myself. I feel like when I talk about this movie, I talk about it in like units. Like there's a greatest family unit, and then there's like the Katrina and I unit, the mom and pa unit, and then there's like Judy and Kieran unit, and then there's the boys, Lewis and Jude unit. I think for our unit, like for Katrina and I, we did so much stuff together. It was the same for, it was just like we were able just to be like, can I just ask you a question about like that? Did this happen? And if so, how enraged would he have become, or how much humor would he have tried to put into this, you know? And he would just answer very honestly, but he'd also be like, you do what you feel is right for it. And trust, like all actors are looking for is to be trusted. We're all terrified. All of us are terrified on set at all times. So any little sort of kernel of trust that you can be dealt by the director, particularly if the director's directing you where you're trying to portray someone that close to him, if you feel that trust, that's massive. That's massive. Just gives you total freedom and liberty to do something that is your own thing that you can own. But he would never let you get away to something that was unrecognizable, and you couldn't because it was on the page anyway, you know. So that was just this sort of perfect combination of us feeling, you know, trusted to do what we wanted to do, but also staying close to what Ken wanted for his parents.
Right. Oh, incredible. Thank you for that. I was speaking with Katrina recently, who's just so nice, just pleasant woman.
Oh, she's so nice.
Yeah, like just like maybe this movie just has too much niceness in it. Maybe that's what it is. I just like, you know, like it's so positive. It's almost like the perfect movie to bring us out of this darkness right now.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that the movie isn't all, you know, thumbs up, happy, laughing. Like it deals with some really heavy subject matter. By the way, which many I wasn't aware of, like, you know, the culture wars and everything going on in Belfast during that time period. So it became educational for me. Katrina talked about, like, you know, just that the ease on set of just feeling that you can really tackle these characters and you can tell this story, and that it almost felt bigger than yourself. Did you feel that same way?
Yeah, totally, totally. And it's a nice mix of like being given confidence by Ken, feeling there in a very safe space by the other actors around you, which we felt really quickly. And Ken did something very clever with our sort of rehearsal period where we just sat around and talked a lot, like really talked. And like, you know, day one, I'm sat around the table and I'd never met, like I'd met Kieran before socially, but I never met Judy before. And it was just all the sort of adults in the family. And we all just sat around and just like told stories about each other and really like opened up. You know, I remember like feeling slightly cagey at the beginning of that process, going like, you know, I shouldn't be at this table. Look at these people there.
Like you didn't feel like you belonged.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, a wee bit like that. Yeah, it was a wee bit like that. And then, but then also then realizing that what is required here is to totally give into this experience and release stuff. And we're all telling very personal stories about ourselves, but then also harnessing those and using them for the characters, and then talking at the end, Ken would talk about how we could bring, you know, slide those into the to what we were about to try to shoot, you know. So it was all very clever, and what it did was made us all feel really super comfortable with each other. So it's an element of Ken giving us the comfort, us feeling comfortable around each other, and then luckily having a good sense of who these people were anyway. You know, I'm from Belfast, you know, so I know these people. Like I grew up with these people. I have a very strong recognition and understanding of what people from that part of the world have been through, what they went through before 1969, what they went through from that year for the next 30 years of conflict, and what they went through after to this day. I feel I've got a pretty good judge on that. So that's sort of invaluable, you know. You know, often you're trying to piece together characters from some part of the world you've never been to, and, you know, with some sort of culture you're not familiar with, and you're putting an accent on, and there's all these different elements trying to, you know, fuse together to make something viable and believable. And here we're presented with something that is like really tangible, just naturally, which is a huge like relief, I think, yeah. More than, you know.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that. I have a question, and it may be a bit personal, so please feel free to just be like, no, I'm not going to go there. But there is somewhat of a connection that I find in the film that I find fascinating and enriching, and maybe why it stands as one of your best performances yet. You know, you're portraying a father that with the son in front of you, who wrote and directed the movie, Kenneth Branagh, you yourself as a father to amazing kids. And then also, I think based on time period, I know you lost your dad last year, very personal, and you guys were close. Is this, the timing of this seemed to like come together in a very significant way. I didn't know if you could speak to that, because I think there's something more cosmic, not to get all religious, but something bigger than the moment.
Yeah, no, listen, man, I've been thinking about that a lot. You know, it's sort of crazy, excuse me, to me, that this is the film that I have coming out post my dad passing, you know. What I take great comfort in is knowing that dad was very aware, like he was fully aware that, you know, I did this film. I mean, I shot it last summer. Dad passed in March. So I always had this hilarious thing with dad, who was so into what I was doing in my career, like really, just really cared, was so crazy proud. But he often didn't really know a lot of the actors. Like I'd be like, dad, I'm doing this really exciting film, because who's in it? And I'd be like, tell him, he'd be like, no idea. But we're talking about like really cool people, like Cillian Murphy, or I don't know, you know, whoever. And he was just not, you know, until I said someone of sort of his vintage, maybe he wouldn't know. So I feel in the last couple of years, when Christopher Walken played my father, and then Ciaran Hinds and Judi Dench played my parents in this, I'm finally getting a bit of headway with dad in terms of like kudos for...
Yeah, I know them.
Exactly, for my co-stars. So I take great comfort in that, you know, my dad had met Ken. Funnily enough, I grew up with a picture of my dad and Kenneth Branagh in my house. My dad's an obstetrician, Ken opened the maternity wing of the hospital. My dad was the senior consultant at, and so there's a picture of Ken Branagh like on our like bookshelf, like all from, you know, 1994 onwards or something, where he did it. But yeah, it pains me massively to see that he won't get to see this film, and particularly with, you know, all the love, the early love it seems to have gotten. And also a crazy element of it is I look so like his father, who I never met, who died before I was born, who we know as Papa, but Papa died 6 years before I was born. But I look so like him in Belfast because I'm clean shaven and the look and the year, the vintage of it and everything. So I think for that, it would have been a crazy watch for my dad. Already is, I know, for even the trailer for my family. They're like, oh my God, you just look like Papa. It's crazy. So, you know, it's really bittersweet for me is the best way of summing it up. You know, yeah. Crazy pride that, you know, I get to tell this story of my dad is Belfast through and through, and God, he would love to see this film and love to read about the lovely things people said about it at this stage. But, you know, I will do my best to just, you know, honor him with whatever plaudits it gets and sort of carry his spirit through it, you know, which I feel it's evident through it. I feel my father part of this movie in so many ways already. So I'm just going to try to carry the positivity of that, I guess.
After the break, more from Jamie Dornan. From Los Angeles, this is the Award Circuit Podcast. And we're back. It's the Variety Award Circuit Podcast, and I'm Clayton Davis. We're talking to actor Jamie Dornan. It's more than a coincidence that Dornan took on the role of Pa in Belfast. Having been born in the Northern Ireland town, Dornan jumped at the opportunity to take on this deeply personal story, a semi-autobiographical take on Kenneth Branagh's childhood. Dornan even grew up with a picture of his own father and Branagh in his house. It seemed as if Dornan was waiting for the two to finally meet his entire life. Before the break, Dornan shared how Belfast was his first film to open following his father's passing in March 2020. Speaking about honoring his father's spirit through this film and his work moving forward, he also talks about his infectious turn in Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, in which he starred alongside Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo. I had to ask what his father thought of his performance in that film, along with the song Edgar's Prayer.
Did he see Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar? And did he see, what was his reaction to Edgar's Prayer?
that was the last film my dad saw of mine. And I actually didn't realize he'd seen it. And, you know, when I've done a lot of looking through texts and stuff, you know, since dad's gone, I've gone through our text conversations and stuff. And some stuff, you know, some stuff you're traveling around, you're like three kids under the age of eight, you miss some stuff. You're like, you know, dad's was a prolific texter, you know, WhatsApper. And I was looking through and I saw that he actually sent through a review. Because again, you know, Barb Saga very favorably reviewed. You know, and so he'd sent me a couple of reviews of Barb and Star. And then I sort of thought he'd just sent those. But then I noticed that he'd also commented on them, that he'd seen it too. And I don't think I realized that in the time. And he'd sort of said about how much fun it was and stuff. So I know that he saw that. He didn't talk about Edgar's Prayer specifically. But I think like dad would have known, and anyone who knows me knows that there's a real side of me where, like, this is what I feel like. I feel like if some of my mates, or my wife certainly, if they saw me on the beach and I was performing Edgar's Prayer, but they were sat like at a beach bar having lunch waiting for me, and I was doing that entire thing, they would just be like, they'd be like, oh, yeah, fair enough, Jamie's
doing Jamie's doing his thing again.
Yeah, they wouldn't be like, what is Jamie doing down there? They would just be like, no. Because I have this like slightly absurd side of me, I guess.
To climb a tree?
I don't think I can, or that fast, or while singing at the same time. But I would certainly climb. I'm one of those people now, as I'll turn 40 next year. But pretty much every single structure in the world that I see, I think, how do I climb that? Can I climb that? How quickly could I climb that? Like, I'm such a child when it comes to stuff like that. I'm constantly wanting to move and like test myself physically with stuff like that. So, but yeah, I think that's like a real silly side of me that like,
I get you on American Ninja Warrior, man.
I don't even know. Is that like Total Wipeout? Is that the same sort of thing?
Well, no, this is serious. So this is like, oh, really? They're like, okay, like 15-foot warped walls. And
oh,
like,
wow, okay.
Yeah. Like for the first 5 years it came to America, or they got major networks, like no one won. They give away $1 million and no one could win. And then finally someone like won. We've had a few winners, but yeah.
I think I'll start with that, like Floor is Lava or whatever. I'd sort of start there.
And then, I want to do Floor is Lava so bad.
Oh, mate.
So bad.
Yeah.
So bad. We should pitch it. We should do it together.
You do it when you tell me, I'll do it with you.
We'll do it. I'm putting it into Netflix. We're going to do Floor is Lava. Okay. It's going to be incredible. Thank you for that. The next question I have for you is about Kieran Hines and Judi Dench, these veterans in the biz. And Katrina actually told me that Judi is hilarious, which I find hilarious also. She's like, she's a dirty old woman. Like, she just tell you like really off the cuff stuff. And I like want to be there on set and hear her going on. But what was it like working with them?
Oh, just crazy. You know, like they're such icons, you know, like massively so. And you know, Judi Dench has all the plaudits in the world. What are we talking about here? Like an Oscar and six other nominations or whatever it is. And she's a dame in the UK. She's like, you know, I mean, she's literally slang. Like in the UK, they have this thing of like, that's so Dench, which means that's like really fucking good. Yeah, it's like, oh, that's Dench. I like your new watch. That's Dench. Like, it's like, what do you have to do to get there? I mean, she's done it. And with Kieran, it's like, I think like I've always thought he's sort of unsung, even though he has this unbelievably remarkable career and has done for such a long time. Mm-hmm. And people from where I'm from and in Belfast and all of Ireland have such a massive appreciation for him. Everyone does, worldwide is appreciation, but I always feel like more people need to know about Kieran Hines. You know, it's just like one of those guys. And they just were so nice. I'd met Kieran, as I said earlier, socially. We're both filming something in Budapest 5 years ago, maybe. And we got on great, but he's one of those people I've always wanted to work with, you know, just lovely, genuinely lovely, brilliant people who are having fun. And I always think like this whole industry is about having fun. Like if you're doing this job for a living because you want to have fun, like, you know, there's other ways to make money where it's stricter. And I'm not saying you don't do the work, but it's got to be fun. You've got to find moments of levity in there in all the serious stuff. I'm a big believer of that. And they brought that in tons. And Judi, yes, she just always has. It's like she's always got like some like sort of naughty secret or something that she's like some naughty secret card that she is holding back. And she's got the most wicked laugh ever. Yeah. She's a dream. I mean, if they could play my parents and everything, I'd be happy boy.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. I'll see that more. I'll see more of that. I have two last questions for you. One is that you were working on an Ireland-based script for quite some time, and then Belfast came along, and you said you're still tinkering with it back during Toronto. Where are you with it now in the process?
Yeah, I mean, I probably can't say a great deal about it, but we're in a really good place with it, and we have like insanely exciting producers on it who I probably can't name at this stage. But yeah, we will hopefully get to make that film at some point, but where there's been a lot of traction, particularly actually in the last, you know, few weeks with it. And hopefully, man, you know, it's hard with these things. And sometimes these things, in Ken's case, you know, started writing in March, started filming in September. That's not what we're experiencing. But it could be next year, it could be in 5 years, but we'll get there with it. But it's very exciting, and it's one of the most satisfying things I've ever done, to be honest.
That's awesome. By the way, I just remembered something I forgot to, regarding Edgar's Prayer, just because side note, last year I interviewed Kristen Wiig and Annie Momolo, and it was right after I saw the movie. By the way, I was so angry with you that I'd spoken to you like a month before that and didn't know Barb and Star was in the hopper. And then it like became what it was, and I lost my face. Yeah. But Annie Momolo said in that interview that she wishes she had video of you singing in the booth. because there was like there was something. She's like, he was like singing his face off in a booth, and she goes, I wish I had tape of that, because it was the minute we looked and we said, oh my god, like what do we have here?
I'm so excited and delighted and glad that they don't have any footage of that. In fact, that was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life, and I was so scared anyway. And then I was like, but I was by myself, it's fine. And then Kristen and Annie just turned up and they weren't meant to be there. And I suddenly saw them behind the glass. I was like, guys, I can't do this now. And they sat there for the rest of the session. They're the best. I love those guys.
Oh, yeah, they are the best. Oh, God. My final question for you is, because I'm the Film Awards editor, got to talk about this. There's Oscar buzz for the movie, in particular for you as well, for Best Supporting Actor. By the way, if you, Kieran, Judy and Katrina all get nominated, which a lot of us are predicting, it will be the third in history what we're going to call a double-double, which has only happened two other times, Peyton Place and The Last Picture Show. So wow. some nice useless knowledge for you.
That's going way back.
I know, yeah.
The double-double is my in-and-out order.
Is it? That's who you get?
Yeah.
Oh, God, they're going to call it the Jamie Dornan now, so get ready for that. But the reason why I was asking about the Oscar buzz is that this year in particular, it seems to be what I'm calling like this image redefinition for a lot of actors that have been known for one thing, but have always been capable of so much more. And I'm looking at you, obviously, you and Dakota Johnson in regards to 50 Shades of Grey, Kristen Stewart delivering in Spencer, like just really taking their own careers by, you know, taking the steering wheel and defining what their career means. And it's really paying off. Have you been doing that consciously, or is it just, I've always been this, just you guys didn't notice? Because also, by the way, I got to shout out Private War. You're fantastic in as well. I'm a big fan of that performance of you in there, but thanks, yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. You know what I think it is? Like, I've always sort of thought that like, you'll get to a certain point and you're there for good reason. Like you're there because, you know, people have put you there. You've done the work. You've got there. You're back in the day, you auditioned for all these things and loads of other people auditioned, by the way, and they chose you. And then suddenly you get thrust into this situation where some people have an opinion about you in it. But you worked hard to get there and you, whatever, beat off the competition, whatever it was. I think we are all very capable. Like, you get to this position, you're capable. And if you're given good material and a great director, then you should be able to perform to the best of your ability or close to it. I think it is kind of as simple as that when you distill it all down. I mean, I think Peter O'Toole said, I quote this a lot, he said, great words make great actors. And I think like that just summarizes it perfectly for me. It's like, you know, if you're at a certain level, if you've got yourself to a certain level where people know who you are, if you're given a good script, it's harder to get it wrong than get it right. You know, it really is. So, you know, I'll go by that. And you're sort of looking for these opportunities to get to showcase different parts of yourself. I've always tried in my career to show off different sides of myself, you know, and I think I've done that in the last 4 or 5 years particularly, and you're always trying to, you know, show what you have to offer, I guess, if, you know, but you're going by what comes your way, you know, and sometimes this stuff, you know, sometimes actors don't get the opportunity because that sort of material isn't coming their way, and then something pops and people are like, all right, they're good, and you're like, well, they were good, they were just like not doing stuff that the world deemed to be good. So, you know, it's all about that, really. I think, you know, yeah, good words, great words make great actors.
Well, you're a great actor, Jamie Dornan.
Thank you very much, Clayton. Yeah,
I love you so much. I think you're incredible. You're also just one of the nicest guys. And that's always a given in this business. So I'm glad that you're as kind as you are. And I look forward to the music tour of Edgar's Prayer, where that's the only thing you sing. That and Everlasting Love. Two numbers. That's it, and then you get off stage.
That would be a quick night. I could probably just about muster that. I could do that.
You could do that. We're going to get you on tour. But, okay. But thanks for joining us today.
All right, dude. Thanks for having me.
That's Jamie Dornan, star of the Focus Features release Belfast, which will hit theaters on November 12th. Make sure to check out our other interview from earlier this week with star Dakota Johnson of the Netflix film The Lost Daughter from writer and director Maggie Gyllenhaal. That's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. The Award Circuit Podcast is edited by Drew Griffith and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest Oscar predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tanke, Janelle Riley, and Michael Schneider, I'm Clayton Davis. We'll see you on the circuit.